With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I'm your co-host, Menas. I'm joined, as ever, by Paul Dennett. Paul, we're recording this after another test victory by Australia.
Yeah, Manners, I had all set to be very funny and just answer your question with talking nothing but the World Cup. But it seems that Mel McLaughlin's beaten us to the punch. Jaleesa Apps, our co-host, sent us that footage of the Channel 7 cricket podcast, and Mel McLaughlin began by just talking purely about the soccer. So we'll get it out of the way, but it was a fantastic performance by Australia. Pity they couldn't beat Argentina. And yeah, the Aussies, as expected, were far too good for the Windies.
Yeah, so Australia beat the West Indies by 164 runs in the first test match of the summer and the first match of their two test series, and player of the match was Marnus Labuschagne. And we're going to get into all the match details. So Paul and I couldn't do daily test reports this test match, so we decided to just wrap up the whole test match. So Paul and I will be wrapping up all 5 days, and then actually you get two shows this week because Paul and I are reconvening in the middle of the week to dive into all the other cricket news, because we're on the precipice of the Big Bash starting. England are breaking records on the other side of the world. So there's so much to talk about. But in this episode, we're going to wrap up Australia's first test of the summer. Before we get into that, though, this episode of Cricket Unfiltered is brought to you by NordVPN. And at the moment, cybersecurity is a hot button issue in Australia with some very well publicized hackings. And, you know, some people are nervous about getting VPNs because they think they're going to slow down your internet speed or your connection. But don't worry, NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs in the world. And you won't even notice it running on your computer. With my NordVPN account, I can protect up to 6 devices, and I don't have to worry about hackers or malicious sites or anything like that. And you can have complete peace of mind that your computer and data is protected.
I have to pick you up there, man. This is not one of the fastest VPNs in the world. It is the fastest VPN in the world, NordVPN. As for me, as always, I'm about the live sport. Whether you're in Australia and you're trying to watch a sporting event that's not being shown here and you've got to flick it to another country, the VPN can do that, and vice versa. When you're overseas, you want to watch something that's only being shown in Australia, you can do that as well. And as I said last time, you feel like Superman, it is a great power to have. So, yep, NordVPN.
And so if you want to take up a special offer for Cricket Unfiltered listeners, you can try it risk-free with a 30-day money-back guaranteed. You go to nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered. Now, I've put that link in the show notes. Please, if you need a VPN, use that link so they know you're listening to Cricket Unfiltered. And as I said, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. So go and give it a go. All right, let's get into wrapping up the first test of the summer over in Perth at Optus Stadium. Well, Paul, just what are your reflections on the match?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the crowds and the fact that it's a pretty hard sell up against the World Cup. And there's been a lot of doom and gloom about it. So, you know, there's the match itself and then there's the surrounding talk. I think, as far as the surrounding talk goes, cricket just has these, it's very cyclical. When Australia's playing England, when Australia's playing India, when there's a World Cup on, it goes through the roof. But some of the other times when we're playing, sadly the West Indies are now a much lower drawing side, we have low periods. And I distinctly remember when the West Indies were out here in 2005-06, them, because there's been some quotes from Steve Waugh in the paper in the last couple of days about, you know, how there's a bit of a lack of interest. 2005-06, they asked him, he'd just retired, did he watch the Australia versus West Indies match that had just gone by? And he said, it's a pretty hard sell to compete against the soccer because Australia just beaten Uruguay to qualify for the 2006 World Cup. So I think it was always going to be a low point in terms of interest. It doesn't mean that cricket's dying, that the national team is hated by the public. It was never going to be good. It wasn't in terms of the crowds. They weren't the worst ever, but it was, I don't think it's, as far as the off-field things are concerned, that it's as bad as everyone's making out.
You sent me the crowd figure, and what the total figure for the 5 days was around 40,000, which whilst being quite low, it's certainly not the only sort of test match at the same period that's had that sort of attendance.
Well, I live for moments like this. In March, I contacted Rick Finlay and said, I heard you've got every crowd ever in Australian cricket. Can I buy it off you? And he said, sure, make me an offer. And I went, I don't know, $50? Maybe if I'd said $5, he would have said yes. But he said, yep, for $50. So I'm the proud owner of the every attendance figure for every test match ever held in Australia since 1877. So if anyone wants any facts about it, just hit me up. And I think that, 42,723 this test match. It compares not too bad to the last time that there was a test match between Australia and the West Indies in Perth in 2009. The total crowd then was 44,610. Or even when you go back to 1997, so back in the West Indies, towards the end of their heyday, Australia had already won that series 3-1. The West Indies won in Perth to make it 3-2. That day, the first day, which was a Saturday, they got a crowd of only 10,091. This time, 10,929. So you'd say back in their heyday, you know, the crowds in Perth weren't that enormous. Now people would say, rightly, Perth's population has increased a lot since then. And when you've got a brand spanking new stadium, more people should be coming to it. But it's a very hard sell on a Wednesday when the prospect of much competitive cricket wasn't all that high. And I don't know why they didn't have it in the Wacker. They always had the plan, I had thought, that they were going to leave the Wacker for the really... you know, keep Optus Stadium for the big ticket matches and have the smaller test matches in the Wacker, where these crowds in the Wacker would have looked quite good. So I think obviously that's out the window. The Wacker's only used for sort of domestic matches now. But I think it's a pity that they didn't use it for that because it looks pretty ordinary in a 60,000 seat stadium, only the best part of, 11,000 people on day one and a little bit less on day two and a little bit more on day three.
Yeah, Nick Hockley, the CEO of Cricket Australia, was asked about whether they would play some matches in the Wacker when it's updated. There's some renovations going on there, but he didn't commit to that. So I think you're right. I think they're going to try and use Optus Stadium for all the test matches. And I guess, you know, there was a lot of talk that maybe the Australian team would be booed and Pat Cummins was going to get booed. But, you know, with the crowd sort of spread around that vast stadium, it would be pretty hard for the crowd to sort of turn on the Aussies.
I think it would have been pathetic if they turned on the Aussies. I mean, I certainly understand people who wish that Justin Langer had not been let go as Australian coach. And I understand that those feelings would be stronger in Perth than they would be elsewhere. But, I think you've got to be a pretty special sort of person to boo Pat Cummins. God, you know, he's one of the most likable guys in the world.
Mm. Absolutely. And I think it's as well around the sort of, I don't know, the stuff around the ill into energy. And there was even some crazy criticisms online of the fact that the Australians were taking a knee before the test match. I mean, I just don't get these people in the public that want our cricketers. They say they want our cricketers to be characters, but when they start doing stuff that they don't like, then they criticise them for it and tell them not to do it.
It was a good thing that they took a knee, and Pat Cummins' decision to no longer be involved in Alinta advertising is a fantastic thing.
So there was also a lot of talk in the lead up to the match around the whole Justin Langer issue. I actually didn't watch any of the Channel 7 coverage. I have no idea what his commentary was like or whether he interviewed any of the players. I know, though, I think quite purposefully he went out onto the ground before play on the first day and was seen embracing players and saying hello to a lot of the players. I know there was reports. Obviously, he and Marnus were very close. They had a lot to say. So I think Justin Langer really did try and just put this all to rest. Got as I knew he would, because he's such a good guy. He was such a good coach. I knew he wouldn't sort of keep this going. So, I think it just sort of settled everything down, and I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think he did really well in terms of, and he was also embracing Mitchell Starc. Like there was sort of, you know, genuine warmth in the interaction between those two. He took part in interviews with players. There seemed to, I think, all of them just must have come to the decision that whatever differences they might have had, they were fairly minor in the grand scheme of things. Let's just get over it and show a bit of class. And they all showed some class, and I thought it was really nice. So I think it was hopefully rules a line across that issue, and then we can move on beyond that. So congratulations to Langer for the way that he comported himself.
Yeah, it's probably time for me to move on then. I thought, though, you know, someone who is so wise and was such a good captain of the Australian cricket team was Mark Taylor, and he said something leading up to this test match that, you know, that Langer and the players, they should think about, you know, what this is doing to the health of Australian cricket. Don't worry about their own self-interest, but, you know, the overall image of the game and, you know, the old adage of let's leave the game in a better place let's leave the game in a better place than when we started. So I sort of thought, you know, Taylor's words were wise, and the players and Langer reacted accordingly.
Yeah, and I think so. And sometimes you can look back and say, okay, maybe the end of the relationship didn't pan out the way that would have been nice. But on the whole, that they have come a long way since the debacle of Cape Town in 2017. The team has achieved much. I think the team is more popular now with the public than it has been in a long time. And I think that the players and Langer deserve credit for that. So, yeah, let's move on. Menas, I know you do get paid significantly by Justin Langer for all that you say, but maybe it's time to even consider ending that sponsorship that you've got with him.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, if the issue goes away, he's not going to need my services anymore. All righty, so let's get into the cricket. As I said, Australia won the test by 164 runs. Pat Cummins won the toss and elected to bat first. And it was Australia's first innings that set up the victory. They made 4 for 598. Usman Khawaja made 65. Manus Labuschagne made 204, his second double century. Steve Smith made 200 not out. He levelled Don Bradman on 28 test centuries. Travis Head agonisingly was dismissed for 99. He's the seventh Australian to fall for 99 in Perth. A lot of those obviously happened at the Wacker. But a commanding first innings for Australia, Paul.
Absolutely. I have a kind of a thing for when the great batter of one era and the great batter of the next era are putting something together. Like, I love it when Greg Chappell and Alan Border had a big partnership, or Alan Border and Steve Waugh, or Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting and Michael Clark. Well, Steve Smith and Manus Labuschagne are that the two, you know, Steve Smith, the best batter of his era, Manus is becoming the best batter of his era. And obviously there's a sizable overlap between their two eras, but the fact that they, between them, put on such a sizable partnership made that opening day for me. And although there was a lot of other things about the day that weren't so good, especially the West Indies, I thought they were particularly disappointing with the lengths that they bowled. When you see two of the, you know, Steve Smith's definitely going to be one of the greats of the game, and Marnus Labuschagne looks like he's going down that path as well. When you see two of the greats get big scores, then you've got to be happy.
Yeah, so on that first day, David Warner was out early, driving it a wide one and played it back onto his stumps. He did make 48 in Australia's second innings, so I'm not too concerned about Warner's form in Australia. Are you, Paul?
No, I'm not in Australia, and I would like to see him be a little bit more aggressive. I know he got out aggressively in the first innings, but I think that short answer, no, I've got no concerns about his form in Australia.
Yeah, so then Usman Khawaja and Marnus Labuschagne put on a nice partnership. For the second wicket, Usman Khawaja, as I said, made 65. So Marnus Labuschagne had an amazing game. 204 in the first innings, his second double century. And then in the second innings, 104 not out. So he's the eighth player to ever make a double hundred and a century in the same game. And he's the third Australian. Quite phenomenal.
And what about this for his average, courtesy of a Rick Finlay tweet? Labuschagne's average before the match was 54.02. After it's 59.31. So it had dropped away a little bit back down into the still very, very good mid-50s. But now he's right back up there challenging the greats of the game. And I was listening to the Triple M coverage at one point, and they made the point that in a short space of time, he'd gone past, I think it was Wally Hammond, Gary Sobers and Kumar Sangakkara as far as an average was concerned, just in a short space of time. So heady stuff for Labuschagne and for Smith. Went from 60.02 to 61.63. So he's right back up above, of anyone who's had any sort of proper length of career. Only Bradman's now above him again. So I find that super cool.
Yeah, just back to Marnus. So he's played 29 test matches and now made 9 centuries in those 29 matches. 50 innings total, 21 scores above 50. That's a remarkable conversion rate. And, you think about how slowly he started in those first sort of half a dozen tests. And then when he came back in for Steve Smith at Lord's, since then, he's just been unstoppable.
And I think Langer deserves credit for that as well, that he was really a champion for Labuschagne in those early days when the figures weren't that great, but Langer clearly could see something magical and, feather in his cap for how well Labuschagne has done. If it hadn't been for Langer being such an advocate, it might have been a year or two later before Labuschagne really had his breakthrough. So well done, Justin Langer.
In Steve Smith, his 29th century, he was asked after that whether he could catch Ricky Ponting's mark. Now, he's at 40 or 41 test centuries. But, yeah, he was asked whether he could, and he sort of...
41.
And he played very coolly that he might not play that much longer. He's played 88 test matches. I hope he's got a good 3 or 4 years left in Test cricket. And then, it's touch and go whether he could get to that 41 centuries mark.
Yeah, but I think you would have to be fairly conservative in answering those sorts of questions, because he would know that he's one injury away or another pandemic away. Look over the last few years, since 2019, that enormous summer that he had in England, things haven't been quite as good and haven't been quite as productive. There was COVID, there were other things as well. So I think it makes sense to not come gung-ho on something that you can't possibly be gung-ho about.
So, yeah, I agree with you. It was great to see Marnus and Smith playing on a pretty flat track against a pretty tired West Indies attack by the end. And Travis Head played the perfect number 5 innings, came out and just scored it over a run of ball, he chopped the ball back onto his stumps for 99. So he'll be disappointed with that. And that brought about the Australian declaration. Then the West Indies were bowled out for 283. Chanderpaul on debut made 51. The skipper Brathwaite made 64. Mitchell Starc took 3 for 51. Pat Cummins took 3 for 34, which included his 200th test wicket. And here's a great stat, again, courtesy of Rick Finlay. It meant that the first time ever in Test history, an attack had 4 bowlers with over 200 wickets. That's quite phenomenal.
Yeah, sure is. It just shows how prolific these 4 have been. And Cummins, that 200 club that he's now in there, and he's right at the top of it. You look at anyone who's taken 200 wickets throughout the history of the game, Very, very few have a record to match Pat Cummins. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens for the rest of his career, if he can maintain that sort of rarefied spot that he's in at the moment.
Yeah, Pat Cummins is in the top. I think there's six bowlers that have taken 200 test wickets at an average under 22, and he's in that elite club. So that is phenomenal. I thought Tangerine Chanderpaul looked really good for his 51 on debut. Paul, it's like seeing a reincarnation of Shivnarine out in the middle.
Yeah, and I think he did look good, and I think that other people have said this, that it was one of the pleasing aspects of the test match, that the West Indies batting showed a lot of fight, and their second inning score was, you don't get that many fourth inning scores that much in Australia, even though it was in a losing effort. But just back onto their bowling on that first day, I don't understand how it's a cliche that every side that comes to Perth, whether it's Optus Stadium or the Wacker, bowls too short and then learns that that's the wrong thing to do. How can that happen in 2022? How can they not have said, I mean, you listen to Michael Holding talk and you listen to Ian Bishop talk. Why aren't those two more heavily involved in the West Indies setup? If Michael Holding was their coach, he would have just said every ball, with the exception of the occasional Yorker and the occasional bouncer, every ball needs to be trimming the bales on the top of off stump. Keep it there all day long. Instead of, you know, short ball after short ball after short ball, I thought it was I'd been saying to people that the West Indies bowling was a reason that they could potentially compete with Australia, that their batting was the weak link. Well, it turned out to be the other way. I thought their bowling was particularly poor throughout the test match.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought they just didn't look like taking a wicket for a lot of us, any wickets at all, really. I thought they started the first day okay for a little while, but as you say, just not enough balls hitting the stumps. So in their batting, they started their first innings pretty well, but then they fell away. And I thought Cameron Green, you know, really sort of rattled the West Indies. He hit Bonner on the head, and then he had to retire hurt and then was subbed out. And he also hit Holder. You know, Cameron Green can really bowl some, attacking, aggressive, hostile spells.
Absolutely. He's such an exciting cricketer. One of the sad things of this match is he didn't get a bat. But yeah, with the ball, it's been said many a time, he came into first class cricket more as a bowler than a batter. And I know that they're managing his workloads because he's had some back complaints, but that aside, they should give him more overs than he gets.
And it also brought about one of those strange things in, you don't see in cricket, but there's actually 12 batters on the West Indies first inning scorecard, because Bonner batted and retired hurt and then was subbed out. And then Brooks came in as his replacement and made 33. So if you look at the West Indies scorecard, there's 12 batters in that first innings. So the West Indies all out for 283. Australia batted again, made 2 for 182. As I said, Marnus with his ninth test century. And then the West Indies batted well into the fifth day, making 333. The captain, Brathwaite, made 110, so a good double for him, 64 and 110. Chanderpaul made 45, so good debut for him. Roston Chase made 55. Alzari Joseph made 43. And they kept Australia out there for a long time. I don't think they ever looked like really saving the game or winning it, but they certainly put up a fight. And Nathan Lyon took his 21st five-wicket haul, 6 for 128 were his figures. He now has 446 test wickets, his eighth on the all-time test tally. And Travis Head had continued his good game, taking 2 for 25. So a spirited effort from the West Indies, Paul, but ultimately just weren't good enough.
It was a very spirited effort, as I said before. I haven't actually looked up the numbers, but how many times in the fourth innings of a match in Australia would a side get 333? It's actually happened a few times of late, where sometimes pitches aren't deteriorating as much as they once did. Also, it helped that Pat Cummins didn't bowl at all in the West Indies second innings. He had that quadricep stiffness. Channel 7 made a lot about him chasing a ball to the fence and not diving and then looking, you know... He reminded me of a bit of me, the way that he was running, like his hamstrings had just basically crawled up and died. But I'm sure that was just precautionary. Maybe he might sit out in the next test match and we'll get to see Scott Boland.
Yeah, well, he was asked about it after play in the press conference, Pat Cummins, and he said this many, many times. He said, oh, this is, you know, I should be right. This is normally a one-week injury. I should be right. This is a one-week injury. Now, I don't know if Pat realizes, but the next test starts in about 4 days. So that's not actually a week. So, and then he was asked, well, if he doesn't play, what will happen? And he said, Smith will skipper and Boland will come in, and they're just deciding whether to bring in another fast bowler to the squad. So I'm actually, my favorite is that I don't think Cummins will play because I don't think he'll want to risk injuring it more for the three South African tests. And as I said, he kept saying it's a weak injury. And I kept thinking, well, then you're not going to be able to play.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that he should. There's no point in jeopardising what's going to come for the rest of the summer. And, you know, I think all of us would love to see Scott Boland get another chance at test level.
Now, you were pretty critical of Nathan Lyon in some text messages to me, Paul, but I thought he bowled excellently in the fourth innings and took some good wickets. And, yes, you know, 6 for 128, good effort from the GOAT.
Yeah, I mean, no, it was a qualified criticism. It was just, he bowled really well. You can't criticise a bloke who takes 6 for 128. I'm not criticising his performance in this match whatsoever. He bowled really, really well. It's just that each time when he's climbing up the list of the most prolific wicket takers of all time, and congratulations to him, he's getting higher and higher in that list. It does stick out that his average is 32 compared to, you know, many of the bowlers in that list averages are in the low 20s or at least in the mid 20s. And I just sometimes think that it calls to mind the state of the game before Shane Warne came in, where people would sometimes say, there's actually no point in having a spinner. You might as well just go with four quicks. And then Warne blew that away because he was so good. I still think there's sometimes there's a need to return to that. And yep, he got 6 wickets in this match, in this innings. He bowled, he got 2 wickets in the first innings as well. So I'm not criticising him at whatsoever. I'd be mad to criticise him in this match. But I'm saying there would be times when we'd be better off picking a fourth quick and then saying that, well, Boland would probably bowl better than Lyon, and then we've got Head and Labuschagne to bowl a bit of spin if we need to. But that's, I didn't put that in these notes because that would be a crazy thing to do, but thanks for sharing our private text messages on.
Well, nothing's ever really private, is it, between us and the show? A couple of things there. You know, well, Pat Cummins actually said after the game, and he said this a lot this week, that, you know, Lyon's almost the most important bowler in the attack because he can bowl 30 overs a day and hold up an end. And, you know, he does add a certain level of control to proceedings when he's bowling. But just one other thing, though, did you see Marnus bowling medium pace in this match? Like, what the hell's going on?
Well, I think it's just cricketers being cricketers that, well, Cummins can't bowl, therefore we need someone who can go as close to replicate him as possible. That's the way they think. So I don't mind him having a go, but I think his leg spin looks more threatening than his medium pace, personally.
Yeah, I agree. And he bowled like 3 no balls or something in the over he bowled, and which made me think, Paul, I actually really want free hits in Test cricket now. I've been sitting on the fence for this one for a number of years, but now I think it's strange when a bowler oversteps and there's not a free hit. So I'd actually like to see it introduced into Test cricket.
I agree. And when people get really angry at that suggestion, I like to say the reason I want it introduced into Test cricket is because I am a traditionalist and I love the traditions of the game. And they go, what? What are you talking about? Because that was going to be their argument in the opposite. But until the front foot no ball rule came in, and I'm too young to remember the back foot no ball rule, the notion was that because the umpire called it so much earlier, the batter would actually hear the no ball call in time and then slog it. And that was where I believe that's the genesis of the free hit in white ball cricket. They said that's kind of the best way that we can replicate that. Absolutely, it should be in the game because Test cricket needs to do everything it can to make itself appealing. And if there's a free hit, especially in Test cricket, even more so than in white ball cricket, you're going to be watching. And as I said, it just restores an old tradition of the game.
Yeah, and a couple of good catches in the West Indies fourth inning. Steve Smith took a pearler, diving to his left off Nathan Lyon. Enough Lyons bowling's off Holder, so that was a great catch. And Mitchell Starc took a fantastic outfield catch, running in and scooping it off the turf to, I think, take the ninth wicket. So that was good effort. Andrew McDonald's obviously not afraid to make them do the odd fielding drill then.
Oh, man, let it go.
Anything you want to add to our test review before we get into the commentary critique?
I suppose just one thing that it's kind of, I have found it disappointing that my main consumption of media is through Twitter and through TikTok, and this test series was a hard sell, but there seemed to be no effort to even sell it. How come Cricket Australia on my TikTok feed haven't been appearing two or three times a day with showing highlights of Viv Richards or showing highlights of the Tide Test match or showing highlights of all the great, massive, storied history between Australia and the West Indies to at least pump the series up to a degree? I mean, Michael Holding's little presentation that he does on Channel 7 talking about the history of it is really good. I don't understand why they don't do at least something to try to build it up and why they aren't ready to sort of unleash something ahead of the South African series. Like, we should already be starting to see on my social media feed Graham Smith getting bowled in 2008 and now being interviewed about it, and talk of Bradman's amazing series against them back in the day, and the difficulties that we've had in more recent times, the 93-94 test match, really pumping the history of it up and saying this is something big. This Australia-South Africa series is a rare opportunity for Australia to actually redress a problem at home, because in recent times, South Africa have had it over Australia at home. There's so much meaningless cricket. This is something that is meaningful. Where is the real pumping of it up through the channels that more and more people are actually watching it? And that's just something that a real rant that I wanted to go on about Cricket Australia. I've looked at their TikTok feed, and aside from one thing they did with Nathan Lyon, which looked pretty nice, there hasn't been much at all about the test series. They should be pumping out four or five bloody TikToks a day about it.
Yep, that's where all the kids are, bloody TikTok. So I'm with you on that one, Paul. All right, let's get into a quick wrap of the coverage of the game. So, I was doing quite a bit of driving during this test match, Paul. So I listened to a bit of the radio, and I listened to quite a bit of the ABC grandstands coverage. And it was a fine standard, I would say. I found it a little boring at times. I'm not naming names, but just overall, I found the coverage a little boring. But certainly when Kim Hughes was on air, it wasn't boring. He's a loose cannon. I enjoyed it. He wasn't afraid to throw out some wild opinions. He's got some crazy stories. And you don't hear from Kim Hughes very often. But he was kind of the one that really stood out to me. Not saying he was even that good just because he was wild. Did you listen, Paul?
I had a few drives and I listened to some of all three of the coverages. I kind of agree with you on the ABC. It's okay. Alison Mitchell's a star. I think that their ball-by-ball stuff is good enough. But their special comments, their expert commentary is okay. It sounds like a Sheffield Shield broadcast to me. It's when I draw a comparison to between it and what I hear in Test Match Special, or what I remember back when, Peter Roebuck or Jeff Lawson were on there more often. I just think that the standard is at a lower level than it once was. It's not terrible, but I too find it a little bit on the dull side.
Yeah. I didn't really try too much of the other ones. Triple M, I find that the ball-by-ball call is Howie's pretty good, but generally they do a lot of TV calling when they're on the radio, so you'll get very vague descriptions of what the ball does. And if you're not really into the cricket and you just want to hear a bit of chat, maybe that's fine. But I like the really, polished ball-by-ball commentators for radio that use all the little signposts where they, flag the length of the ball, they flag the line of the ball, they flag the shot, they flag where the ball goes. And if a good commentator does all that, then someone who's watched a lot of cricket can put the whole picture together in their mind. Whereas if you don't say that, and you just, he played a missed. Well, what? What did he do? What was the ball? So that's why I still found the ABC probably the best for that.
I mean, look, I have historically on this podcast, every time James Brayshaw gets bagged, I've always said, I actually don't mind him. And I don't. But I have now understand what you're saying, because I heard some of his ball-by-ball coverage, and I don't understand. It's not even as brief as what you're saying. Sometimes there were one or two balls where he said nothing, and you had to just deduce as the listener that the batter had just sort of let it go. How hard is it to just say, and he lets that go? It's as though sometimes Triple M are a bit afraid that the cricket can't appeal to their audience in and of itself, because they're worried that this is a sort of a rugby league Aussie rules audience who are not necessarily all that convinced about the cricket. So they've got to kind of pump it up and get the peripheral stuff going to keep it interesting. And you know, if that's what their market research indicates, fine. I'm delighted that there are three different coverages. It's better than back in the day when there was only one. But yeah, no, Triple M, there's parts of it that I really like. Brad Haddin continues to just not be bothered to learn to pronounce players' names after calling Josh Butler. I heard him call Kumar Roach. And of course, it goes without saying that he calls Craig Braithwaite. Justin Langer called Braithwaite as well. It's like, I sometimes think I'd almost like to get, you know, if I got some 17-year-olds who are looking at to be good cricketers, I'd sort of, can you pronounce this? If they say Braithwaite, say, like, mate, you're never going to be any good at cricket. You've read too much. Only those who say Braithwaite will be any good.
On that descriptive stuff, I was talking to someone because I was listening to some football commentary out of the World Cup. And again, one of the commentators was commentating on the radio like it was people were watching on TV and just saying things, and you had no idea what was going on unless you were watching. And I've heard it on, you know, Big Bash calls. I've heard it on different all types of different coverage. And I was speaking to a commentator about it who was saying that they think it's because a lot of these people grow up watching TV coverage and they just mimic that, and they're never actually taught the difference between, you know, TV and radio.
Well, that's an extraordinary statement. I mean, no, that can't be right. I mean, people aren't that stupid that they think, oh, I've never actually listened to something on the radio. I'm unaware of the fact that radio doesn't have pictures. What you're saying, the people can't see it? No, I think that they just well, certainly with the case of the Brayshaw, I just think that he's thinking that. He thinks that the fans are not interested in the minutiae of what's going on. That they're only interested in the broad brushstrokes, and maybe they have a point, but it doesn't appeal to me. I briefly listened to SEN, and my inkling is it's probably the best that my drive came to the end by the time I'd switched to SEN, and they had Waitley, who's fantastic. They had, I think, Ian Bishop on and Simon Kadich, and that was that sounded like a pretty good trio. So they may well be the best. If I drive in the second test, I'll probably give them a bit more of a go.
Yeah, agree. And as for the TV coverage, I really didn't watch a lot. I was binging a lot of podcasts while watching. So I'm going on a deep dive on the Star Wars trilogy series, the Force Awakens onwards, that trilogy. So I've got about 10 hours of podcast listening lined up for the second test. So no one cops a whack from Fox Cricket because I wasn't listening.
On Channel 7, Tim Lane is the best. He is the best broadcaster of cricket in Australia across radio or television, in my opinion. Every year when I get to hear him again, I've always liked him. Even back in the 90s on ABC Radio, he was always my favourite, and I really enjoy listening to him. Ponting is fantastic as always. Glad that his health scare was nothing much. Alison Mitchell is excellent as well. Langer was okay. He was kind of as I expected. He's all right in small doses, but Hayden's all right again in small doses, but once you have to hear more than 5 or 10 minutes of him, I don't think he's good enough, frankly, to be on the coverage. I think he's a good mentor, and I think he's got a lot of knowledge about the game, but as a commentator, after a while, he's annoying, and that's the sort of the cardinal sin. But I still think that, yeah, I think that the Channel 7 coverage is better than any of the radio. In the old days of, oh, well, you know, you turn the TV down and listen to the radio. Not that I ever did that. I think that era is long gone. And yeah, this time around, I didn't hear any of the Foxtel coverage, so I can't comment on that either.
Okay. Well, what I heard of the Foxtel coverage was pretty good, but that was only in very small doses in between podcasts. All right. Well, I guess that's it for our wrap of the the first test. I guess just quickly, Ricky Ponting, there was a health scare for him on the third day of the test where he was taken to hospital after suffering chest pains, but he was back on the coverage on the fourth and the fifth day, so that's great news. And, yeah, I think there's just, you know, I just think it's really important for men in their, you know, late 30s, 40s and 50s to get a heart check, and that was just another reminder.
Absolutely, yep, definitely. I have a couple of Can't Let It Goes minutes. I thought we were still doing that.
All right, well, give it to me. What are they?
Number one, as Roach walked out to bat at number 11, injured, and he only lasted one ball, so I couldn't really see just how immobile he was. It just made me think, now that we've got concussion substitutes, and you would have once said that's one of the hardest things to police, and you know, what you're saying, you're going to have someone who's not in the 11 actually batting and bowling. If you'd said that to someone 10 years ago, their head would have exploded. That just was so anathema to cricket. And now it's in and it's fine. It's time to bring back runners. It's just stupid that you've got to go that, therefore, if you're limping, that you can't bat at all, or you've got to bat and then try and hit fours. Just bring runners back and regulate it. That's a no-brainer, in my opinion. And the other one, I found it weird that when the cricket ended Sydney time at about just before 5:30, that at 5:30, they had half an hour to go. Rather than wrap up the game and interview the captains and have a bit of an analysis of the game, they cut straight to Sydney Weekender. Now, I didn't care. I was probably going to stop watching anyway. But I don't understand why that. I would surely think that the interviews of Laba Shane and, you know, if it's done well, those sorts of things would rate better than Sydney Weekender and be a better lead into their news. The fact that they just cut it like that, maybe the satellite costs, I don't know. But to me, it almost looked as another example of Channel 7, you know, they're seeing out their contract with Cricket Australia, but they don't have much love for them.
I'm not sure. I think if you're like a casual cricket fan and you see the match over and, you know, player interviews and presentations and analysis, maybe that's when you start flicking and looking for something else. So maybe they thought they could just keep more of the audience with that other show you mentioned. Obviously, you know, it's completely foreign to me because it would never work. But yeah, that's the only thing I can suggest.
No, but when I think of it, I think of the people like my mum, who's a casual fan. I think that's the stuff that would have appealed to her. If they were talking, you got to hear some of the players' personality and whatever, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was curious that they cut straight away to a different show, especially with just half an hour to go before the lead into their 6 o'clock news.
All right. Well, good, because Paul had two Can't Let It Go, so I don't have any, so that works out well. Paul, I think we should wrap it up. Thanks very much for joining me to wrap up the first test match. We'll be back on Wednesday for all the other cricket news, but we'll catch up then.
See you, mate.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you want to take up the NordVPN offer, the links are in the show notes.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.